It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
I can't imagine what it was like for you to be with the Rangers to see Nolan Ryan age as dominantly as he did.
Yeah, and you know, and he was 40 years old when he came to the Rangers. We still, though, were blown away by the fact that he chose to play for us, you know, a woebegone franchise. And when Nolan arrived, all of a sudden, we had crowds at every hotel. All of a sudden, we had crowds, you know, outside the ballpark as our guys were getting on the bus. Nobody paid much of attention to the Rangers before that. And once Nolan arrived, all of a sudden, it was like, you know, it was like Elvis had joined the Rangers. And that, you know, they we were somebody. But the other debut, I guess that's really noteworthy, you know, for us was Pudge Rodriguez. Pudge got called up when he was 19. He got called up from Double A to actually play a game at Comiskey Park. And I remember interviewing Pudge in the dugout before that game. And his English was not great, but it was good enough. He said, I want to do the interview in English. He was 19. And he was called up because our catcher, Gino Petralli, had gotten hurt. And Pudge was just going to be there for 2 weeks. And I asked him in the pregame show, you know, have they said anything to you about how long you're going to be here? Because, you know, Gino's only supposed to be out for 2 weeks. And Pudge said, yes, they told me I'm only here for 2 weeks. And he looked me right in the eye and he said, but I tell you right now, I never go back to the minor leagues. And he was right. He never went back.
Wow.
He threw out two would-be base stealers that night. And when, you know, held his own offensively, the arm was unlike anything we'd ever seen. And he was catching Kevin Brown and Charlie Huff and Nolan Ryan, you know, three guys who are really tough to catch. And, you know, within 2 weeks, he was the Rangers' everyday catcher. You know, Gino came back and assumed a backup role.
If I were to ask you about, you know, one of your favorite Nolan moments in the booth that maybe we could go find, that felt special and you feel like, you know, from a play-by-play perspective, it really came together for you as well. Is there one that comes to mind?
Yeah, the biggest moment for me was his 5,000th strikeout, which came in 1989. And the Rangers, it was the brainchild really of John Blake, the Rangers PR director, who decided to make this a big deal. You know, nobody had ever made it a big deal when someone got to 4,000 strikeouts or 3,000 strikeouts, but they made 5,000 strikeouts sound like it was, you know, some notable achievement, and people bought it. The media bought into it. And the Rangers published this list of every one of Nolan's strikeouts and how many times he had struck out each guy and how many father-son combinations he had struck out. And everybody went gaga over the 5,000 strikeout. And back then I was doing the middle three innings. Mark Holtz was my partner. He did the first three and the last three. I did the middle three. And I was lucky enough that the 5,000 strikeout fell in one of my innings.
This is the third full count in a row for Ryan. Here's the payoff pitch. He struck him out swinging. Strikeout number 5,000 is history for Nolan Ryan. Brings the baseball to the mound, and the Rangers converge from all over the field. The infielders and outfielders are surrounding Nolan Ryan on the mound.
On August 22nd, 1989, I'll never forget the date, and the game was not televised locally. The Rangers back then, you know, didn't do home games on TV, with rare exceptions. So my call of the 5,000th strikeout was what was carried on national media. My parents got to hear it on the Today Show the next day, which was the only time, you know, up to that point that in New York they had heard a call that I did. You know, it was before radio calls were everywhere nationwide. And that one was interesting because I'd never had a real big moment like that. And I knew, you know, from listening to baseball my whole life, that the thing to do at some point after it occurred is to just shut up and lay out and let the crowd tell the story, since it was happening in a home game and I knew it would be crazy when he got the strikeout. But when he got the strikeout and I was getting ready to shut up, the whole Ranger team ran to the mound. And we hadn't anticipated that. And I felt that as the radio announcer, it was incumbent upon me to describe what I was seeing, to describe what was happening. So instead of being able to lay out, I needed to describe the fact that the Rangers had all left their positions, you know, and were sprinting to the mound to congratulate Nolan. And eventually I got to the point where I could shut up for a while, you know, and let the crowd tell the story. But, you know, talking about how all of the players were heading to the mound, you know, painted an amazing word picture that, you know, the people at home, you know, wouldn't otherwise have been aware of.
That's really cool. I've got a list of like the greatest baseball trivia questions that have ever come my way. And I just called it up. 7 father-son combinations struck out by Nolan Ryan. I'm sure you knew him then. Any come to mind just for fun? We'll throw this.
The Alomars do.
The Alomars. Yep.
And one of the reasons is that Roberto Alomar was the final out in Nolan's 7th no-hitter.
Oh, wow.
His 7th and final no-hitter against the Blue Jays.
There you go. Yep. Griffey, Bonds, Alomar, McCray, Hal and Brian McCray, the Franconas, the Wills, and Schofield. That's the one I didn't get, is Schofield. All right. So that was the biggest moment of your career at that point. I'm sure in 2011, you thought you were about to have some huge ones again. Yes, I'm going to take you right to the darkness, Eric. I'm going to take you to the darkness, because I mean, what was that like? I mean, I imagine you think of David Freese more than you think of the end of Game 7, kind of like people think of Carlton Fisk in 76, you know, more than anybody thinks of Game 7, things like that. What comes to your mind?
Yeah, Game 6 is a complete nightmare for Ranger fans. I can think about it now without getting sick to my stomach, now that the Rangers have won. Up until November 1st of last year, when you mentioned Game 6 of 2011, it really did make me start to feel nauseous. Having had the opportunity twice to close out a game with one strike needed and then not closing it out, first because of the David Freese shot that Nelson Cruz didn't catch, and then, you know, a very lucky bloop single by Lance Berkman that tied the game the second time after Josh Hamilton had hit a home run, you know, in the top half of the 10th inning. But, you know, I was somewhat prepared for a final call before the Freeze shot that Cruz didn't catch. I had scribbled down a couple of notes on things that I wanted to make sure to say, you know, after the Rangers had won, just in reference to the number of years it had been and that sort of thing, without actually scripting the call, but some information that I wanted to make sure that I passed on. And then when the fly ball to right wasn't caught and the game was tied, I crumpled up the piece of paper and I threw it underneath the counter. When Josh Hamilton hit the home run in the top of the 10th inning that put the Rangers back in front, I crawled underneath the counter and found the crumpled up piece of paper and uncrumpled it and put it on the desk next to my scorebook, only to throw it under the counter again when Berkman had that bloop single that tied the game in the bottom of the 10th. And then I never went back to it when David Freese hit the walk-off in the 11th, and that sent us home. But going to St. Louis, I think we've gone 3 times since that World Series, has always been kind of unpleasant. The broadcast booth is located slightly over on the third base side so that we stare directly at right field. There's a golf sign on the fence there where Nelson Cruz did not catch the fly ball that, as of last time we were there, which was a couple of years ago, is still there. It's like they might as well have painted a chalk outline of Nelson Cruz on the warning track to remind us what happened in front of that golf sign.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. So sorry to make you relive it. My God, well, but then But then we get to last year, the 12th anniversary of that game is game one of the World Series, one of the great World Series games of all time.
Yeah.
You know, with Seager
and Adolis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And we will go to St. Louis this year, and I'm looking forward to going and, you know, not having my heart, you know, up in my chest and, you know, feeling nauseous looking out at right field. I know I can handle it right now. I haven't gone back and watched the freeze hit on a replay, but I think if it came on TV now when I was watching something, I wouldn't turn away the way I always have in the past. And now that the Rangers have won, it's like the pressure is off. I know all you Cubs people probably felt the same way after 2016. You know, maybe we'll win another one, maybe we won't. But the pressure is off, and it's like now we're playing with house money.
Yeah, you know, we should talk about your final call when the Rangers did win it last year, because all of that context was in there.
Two balls, two strikes. Spores kicks and fires. He struck him out looking. It's over. It's over. The Rangers have won the World Series. Ranger fans, you're not dreaming. The Rangers are the World Series champions. After 52 years in Texas, 63 years in the franchise, the wait is over, and the celebration has begun.
Did you have the piece of paper? Was it a similar kind of paper? Did it? It never got crumpled. It never went underneath the console this time.
No, fortunately, they didn't go under the console. Marcus Semien made sure of that with the home run he hit in the top of the ninth. It made it 5-0.
The 0-1. Semien lines one deep to left center field. That ball is way back, and that ball is history. A two-run homer for Marcus Semien. It's 5-0 Rangers in the ninth.
On the piece of paper, all I had scribbled down during the day, because the whole day I felt that I was dreaming. The Rangers were up 3-1. You know, we felt they had a far superior team to Arizona, but still, even the Rangers can screw this up. But I felt I was dreaming that the Rangers might actually be winning the World Series tonight. And at one point, I was sitting in my room and I grabbed a piece of notepaper, it was the Arizona Biltmore, and scribbled on it, "You're not dreaming." And I put it in my wallet. And when I got to the ballpark, I stuck it in the back of my scorebook. And when Semien hit the home run in the top of the ninth to give the Rangers some breathing room, I got that piece of paper out and I put it next to my scorebook to make sure that when the game ended, at some point, I said in the call, you know, Ranger fans, you're not dreaming. Wow. Because that's really what it felt like to me. You know, this is the Rangers. This can't possibly really be happening. And as it turned out, you know, that really resonated, you know, with people. So many people have come up to me since then saying, you know, you captured it perfectly by saying, you know, Ranger fans, you're not dreaming. And not only did I not have to crumple up that note, but we auctioned off that note for charity along with my headset from the game, which was falling apart. I'd used it for 10 or 12 years. And we auctioned those two things off for, and they went for $15,000. Raise money for the Suicide and Crisis Center in North Texas. And so that's the story has a happy ending when it comes to notes for final World Series calls.
Yeah, it does. Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize that charity meant something to you specifically, because it's interesting. Last year, you took a leave of absence that you were open and honest about, which was, and that's very powerful to share that kind of stuff in terms of anxiety and depression. Is there some sense of karmic significance that the year that you address that or deal with that is the year that you're back and get to live this World Series championship?
Yeah, I think so. It's almost as if it were a Hollywood script, you wouldn't believe it. You know, announcer misses the first half of the season because he's got anxiety and he can't sleep. And then he comes back and actually gets a chance to do a World Series winner after, you know, working for 45 years in this job. It's almost too much to be believed. But, you know, I feel so blessed. I feel so grateful. And, you know, a lot of people have contacted me saying that, you know, the fact that, you know, I talked openly, you know, about going to therapy and trying different forms of treatment had led them to do the same. And that's amazingly gratifying. You know, I don't wish depression, anxiety, insomnia on anyone, but having gone through it, at least probably had some positive benefits for a significant number of people. And, you know, I'm glad to say that.